Okay, we're gonna maybe start just a minute sooner, if that's okay. If we could everybody just find your seat. I wanted to take a minute and talk a little bit about the Friends of the Restoration program. I've got since 2007, but it may have gone earlier than that. We lost just one of my heroes last year, and Ansel Jenkins. He passed away on the 15th of July, I believe it was. And Ansel and Elaine were just special people to me, and so to so many of you. Dan, didn't you go over and preach his funeral? Yeah, your cousin. And so the Jenkins family obviously are just a great blessing to the brotherhood today. And Ansel certainly was a hero of mine. And Ansel called me, I guess, early 2000s. And he says, I got this idea. He said, I just think it would be great if we just got a group of folks together and tried to do some things at different Christian colleges. And Brother Sewell, he talked to Brother Sewell, and Brother Sewell was president then. He just said, well, let's start it right here. And so we started meeting. I think we were over at GC the first time, and we ended up at Brown Copel, and we've been to different places around. John Ansel Jenkins, he was just, he was the brainchild. He loved this. Of course, he wrote a biography on A.G. Freed, and he was, I think Elaine was connected to the family. So he was married into that, the Freed family. And so he wrote that great volume, and he actually redid it, toward the end, and some other works that he did. He wrote several books. And I think Sam has the rights to most all those books and sells a lot of Ansel Jenkins. But we lost him. We lost Earl Kimbrough last year. And Brother Earl just, he was a great student of history and restoration history, but he was kind of part of our group. We'd have him, we'd see him at Faulkner from time to time, but he passed on to be with the Lord. But he would always say, Ansel would always say that this is just an informal group. You know, we don't have dues or anything. We're just a group of folks that just love we love our history, and we want to remember the great things that have been done for the cause of Christ down through the years. And so I just wanted to show you Ansel. If you don't know, he's the guy in the middle up there. And of course that's Wayne and Sam and Tom, and that is Alvin Jennings. And that was a 2012, I think, photo that we just jumped up for. But we kind of would get together and talk about things we want to do. And so we meet here. We have a program at Faulkner. We'll be doing some things down there in October. They've started their forum again, and it will be in October of this year. But we also are at Southeast Institute of Biblical Studies in April, and we'll have a forum there as well. So get involved. Go online in Facebook. We have a Facebook group, and we have 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000 people, and they'll ask you a couple of questions. Make sure you're not trying to sell Amway, and if they can figure out that you know a little bit, then they'll let you in. But it's meant to be a kind of a fun side of our history, and we remember birthdays and death dates, and just tell some stories. Somebody's doing some research. And so Friends of the Restoration, I call you a friend of the restoration because you're here this morning. I really appreciate you being here today. So that's that part. Let's slip over to Gary's and let me introduce Gary Hampton. Gary preaches for the Sewell Road Church of Christ in Jackson, Mississippi. He's preached in 31 states and 7 foreign countries, and directed the Southeast Institute of Biblical Studies for 6 years. He's published 21 books. And I still have the articles from the World Evangelist where you would do the children's or the Bible class studies. And so a lot of churches did their weekly study from the World Evangelist and studied Gary Hampton for years and years back in the 70s and 80s. So Gary is another one of my favorite guys, and he's a special part of this program. He loves the history of the church. We've asked him to talk about the role of schools of preaching in Christian education. So take any more of your time, Gary.
I count it an honor always to be with this group. These, all of us help each other. When we're studying something, we dig together. Tom's going to change his phone number, so I'll quit calling him. And probably Scott will change his too. So we interact with one another. I'm so glad that Wayne ran out of time, because I could tell he was about to wade off into my stuff. I didn't need him to do that. I was interested in this topic. Honestly, I didn't choose this topic. I mentioned something else, but this one works. It just took a lot of study to come up with. I do want to notice, is that the original preacher training really was done by the Lord. If you really think about it, I've given you some references. Obviously, that's to him training the 12. Then you got both Barnabas and Peter. They also trained. I think John Mark likely was trained by both of them. And there's a sense in which, I know Paul's an apostle, and I'm not in any way putting that down, but there's a sense in which Barnabas played a key role with him as well, because he encouraged him and he helped introduce him there in Jerusalem. Now, from here on, you may or may not agree with me, but Buffalo Seminary was intended to be a preacher training school. That's what he meant for it to be. And I've got some things here. This comes from Robert Richardson's biography of Campbell. It was a two-volume set. And he began Buffalo Seminary in 1818 in his home. The reputation of the school, according to Richardson, became so great that there was no longer room for all who applied for admission. Mr. Campbell did not find the institution to meet entirely his wishes in that particular, which was to him the most desirable. Now, listen to what that was. He did not find among the students much inclination toward the ministerial office, and greatly desired to see some of them disposed to consecrate their lives to the cause of truth. So why did Buffalo Seminary close? As much as I can tell from Richardson, it closed because he was not having the impact that he wanted to have in terms of training preachers. He would not have called his school a preacher training school, I dare say, but that was what he hoped that it would do primarily. That was one of the big things that he looked forward to. And then there is Bethany College. Of course, that in some ways is the descendant of Buffalo Seminary. It's the next thing that he did. All I've done here is notice some of the graduates of that college. And as you look at this, it's remarkable. James Alexander Harding. And one of these days, I hope that as one of our discussions, that we talk about J.A. Harding's trust doctrine. There's an entire master's thesis written on Harding's trust doctrine, and I'm thankful to say that the brother that wrote it gave me a copy of it. So I got it digitally, and I printed the thing out so I could read it. It's fascinating, and it impacts so many other people. Bishop that went to Japan was a disciple of Harding's trust doctrine. Now, let me tell you how that translates. Brother Harding believed if a work was a good work, that he could start it whether he had the money or not, the Lord would take care of it. That's what he believed. Thus, you know, one of the primary biographies of Brother Harding is The Eyes of Jehovah. And he believes in the providence of God that intensely, that he'll do things or did things without having the funding before he started. Well, Bishop followed the same course. He and his wife got married and they decided they were going to go to Japan. And they determined that they'd raise a little bit of money. They'd go as far as the money would take them. They got to California. That's as far as they got. They did eventually raise more funds. They got on to Japan, where Bishop was planning to print, for example, J.W. McGarvey's original commentary on Acts He was going to print that in Japanese. That's what his goal was. Well, he ran out of money, not surprisingly, because he'd not done his legwork at home. He's not quite as well known as Harding, and so he can't pull that off. And so what he did was he ended up selling his printing press to a Japanese printing company, and with an agreement, he's going to work for them, thereby earning enough money to support his wife, and they would let him print at night. So guess what he did at night? He printed J.W. McGarvey's original commentary in Japanese. So that's one of the graduates of Bethany College. Then you have John William McGarvey. I suppose everybody in here has been exposed to McGarvey. And by the way, if you've not found it, there's the J.W. McGarvey page is online. It's now run by Abilene Christian University, I believe. But that page has almost every work of Harding's ever digitally available to you. And you can download it to your computer and use that as you see fit. Then Moses Lard. I'm coming to appreciate Moses Lard more the longer I read his material. He is a master of the English language. He writes in the style of some of the old great novel writers. And he keeps your attention the whole way through. Now, that does mean occasionally he runs off on a rabbit trail, but he'll come back if you give him an opportunity, and you can learn a lot from him. Other graduates include Otis Asa Burgess, William Randolph Cunningham, Alexander Ellett, Ephraim Samuel Frazee, Richard Henry Johnson, and Charles Lewis Luce Sr., who was also became an educator himself. Then in addition, I'm probably not pointing to the right place. This was to me, my greatest find. And I don't remember who steered me on to it. Except Scott. I think he mentioned it first. And I've given you a reference from his material. And if you've not visited the restorationmovement.com, you ought to. It's a rich, rich thing. Point that way. Okay, sorry. I'll learn as I go, maybe. By the early 1880s, William Henry Crutzinger established what came to be called the Preacher Training School in Ellettsville, Indiana, near Bloomington, Indiana. Horace Hines, one of Crutzinger's former students, described the purpose of the school as particularly and essentially a preacher training school to fit and qualify men for deeper study and better understanding of the Bible. Well, who went there? I think folks around here will be interested in who went there. A.G. Freed enrolled in the school in the spring of 1888. Benjamin Franklin Taylor, who was a great Indiana preacher and the sixth superintendent of Potter's Home in Bowling Green, Kentucky, also went there. Homer H. Anderson preached in Woodsfield, Ohio from 1923 to 29. The Vinewood Congregation in Detroit, Michigan from 29 to 41. And then he moved to the church in Franklin, Kentucky. I don't have all the dates on that, but I know that's, I think, where he finished his career. Then William Morton Davis, who some designate as Mr. Firm Foundation after the death of G.H.B. Showalter. He wrote for the paper for 50 years, 45 of those. He wrote the front page article for the Firm Foundation. So these are the fellows that were trained in this little known school, one I had no knowledge of. If you care to pursue it, you want to go to Scott's work and work from there. And then with a little bit of digging, you'll find out some of these other things as well. So we've got Franklin College. This has already been mentioned. I'm not going to elaborate greatly on that. T.B. Larimore, of course, attended there. David Lipscomb, Elisha Granville Sewell, that's E.G. Sewell. If you have done much reading, you'll have bumped into him. William Lipscomb, who, interestingly enough, was the first to work on the Gospel Advocate. Not David. You got to bear that in mind as you think about that. And then William Newson Anderson and Joseph Hill Ruhlhock, all of those attended Franklin College. And again, think of that we're talking about schools that ended up training many great preachers. That's what we're talking about. So Nashville Bible School. Nashville Bible School was founded by two men, really, James A. Harding and David Lipscomb started that school. They met in basically a big house is what it was there in the Nashville area. And they had a number of great graduates. The one I zeroed in on for a picture here was H. Lil Bowles, who is went from October the 12th, 1903 to the spring of 1906. And Bowles, a tremendous fella to bump into. I think he's the one that put up a nice book that contains sketches of many of the people that you'll want to study. And Scott and the rest of us cheat a little bit. We use his sketches, you know, when we get an opportunity because they're well done. And they introduce you to characters that at least I don't know. And so I like that book. Also, James Sterling Dunn went there, Thomas Marion Evans, Paul Hayes, Charles Dennis Tidwell Sr. also attended Nashville Bible School. I'm going to try to slow down, but I'm telling you why I'm going fast. I was told that we're supposed to get to chapel. So if you want to know more, I like to talk. I'll talk with you anytime, especially about this. Mars Hill, first called an academy, later called a college. You've already heard a little bit about it. It was the work of T.B. Larimore. You've heard that. You heard that J.H. Holbrook attended there. But what you may not know is that Holbrook was married to a woman named Margaret Vick. Margaret Vick was a member of the Lord's Church from Middle Tennessee. By the way, Holbrook was from Middle Tennessee as well. Holbrook was not a member of the church, but he was engaged to Margaret Vick. He went off to the Civil War. He was, now think about a Southern boy captured in the Battle of Nashville and sent immediately to prison camp in Chicago in December, because that's when the Battle of Nashville occurred. But that's where he went, and he survived, thankfully. When he got out, he was already in debt, but he borrowed $2 more so that he could get a marriage license, and he married Margaret E. Vick, who he said had a wonderful, kind heart. And that wonderful, kind-hearted woman patiently worked with him. He obeyed the gospel. And after he obeyed the gospel, like somebody else you've already heard about here today, he started to preach, and the brethren informed him that he probably needed to get a little more education in the Bible if he wanted to preach. Now, Holbrook eventually became quite conversant with Scripture. He was really a very, very good preacher, traveled a number of different places. He baptized a fellow by the name of Charlie Alexander Wheeler. And Brother Wheeler was an interesting fellow. He had a number of debates. Often they usually were with denominational preachers who would come in, and you can almost imagine them coming in with their ponderous volumes and stacking them up on the table, getting ready to debate Brother Wheeler. Brother Wheeler would come in with just a Bible. That's all he had. And many times he converted not just folks in the audience, he'd convert the preacher too, because he was that familiar with the Word of God. Well, Brother Wheeler went to a place called Mountain Home School. Correct me if I'm wrong now, fellas, but that's my recollection, to hold a gospel meeting. And he asked who a good song leader would be. And basically the brethren said, we don't have one. And he said, well, who is a good song leader? And they said, well, there's a young man. He's a denominational young man, but he's a really good song leader. And he said, well, let's get him. And the song leader led, and each the next day, he would talk to a woman within the community there about what he'd heard the night before and how enamored he was with the scripture that was being presented. And the woman looked at him after a few days and she said, "You better look out. They're going to turn you into a Campbellite." And the response of the song leader was, "I don't know about Campbellite. All I hear is the word of God. That's all I hear." Well, now the next part of this, I know part for sure is true, and part may be, you know, some of that historical fiction that we like to set forth. On the last night of the meeting, many people respond to the invitation, and I am told by some that one was at the end of the song was the song leader. He turned and sat down and said he wanted to be baptized. You know him, Augustus Nichols. And Augustus Nichols, in his lifetime, baptized some 12,000 people. By the way, Brother Wheeler baptized, I think, about another 6,000. And then Brother Nichols baptized Flavel Nichols, his oldest son, who in turn baptized at least 3,000. So you've got one woman, Margaret E. Vick, an almost unknown entity, died of wasting consumption. I think that's tuberculosis is what I believe that is. She died very young, didn't even live to be 50 years old. But she, through her impact, has children, 21,000 at least. And I'm going to add something to that. Brother Nichols baptized my mother. And so there's a sense in which I come out of that story that we're talking about. Brother Holbrook, little known as well, but a very powerful fellow. Then you got also from Mars Hill, James R. Bradley, who baptized hundreds, Benjamin Franklin Hart, Dr. Osman Cicero Henry, James Lee Jackson, George Arthur Llewellyn, who was president of, listen to this now, this is Freed Hardeman country, right? He was president of West Tennessee Christian College. Then there's Thomas Cheatham Little Sr., Jephthah Clayton McQuitty, who served as the office editor of the Gospel Advocate, Fletcher Douglas Shrigley, or FD, you've already heard about him, Hiram Hardin Turner, all those, at least, and you could name a whole lot more. I've just cherry-picked a little bit. Okay, Brother Wayne has a book on Brother Bradley, so you may want to talk to him. If you're like me, my library is never big enough. Oh, was he? Okay, you're on. Great. Okay. All right, I want to talk about the School of the Evangelists. Ashley Sidney Johnson wanted to train preachers, especially preachers who could not afford to pay for their tuition. So he purchased his great-grandfather's farm on the hills bordering the French Broad River. That's near Knoxville or in Knoxville, Tennessee. The school began in 1893. John Moody McCaleb took a correspondence course of Bible study under Ashley S. Johnson. He didn't go to the school in person, but he did take a correspondence course. And of course, McCaleb wrote The Gospel is for All. He was a long tenured missionary to Japan, a very, very well known for that work. I want to talk about a different fellow, though. G.C. Brewer's father, Hiram S. Brewer, died of malaria in 1901. In 1903, G.C.'s mother told him he could go to school if he could support himself. Brewer applied to Nashville Bible School in 1904, but they didn't have any place for him. And so he wrote to Ashley Johnson to ask if he could work his way through school. Johnson said, "Come on, son Timothy, we never turn down any boy who wants to be a gospel preacher. If you don't have any money to pay your way, walk. When you get here, we'll take care of you." Well, and they did. They lived up to that, but in a way they didn't anticipate. You see, Brewer worked for 6 months in 1904 to pay for 2 years' tuition. He started school in September, but Old Main burned in December. And so the school had to stop, you know, temporarily because of that. So Brewer and C.E. Coleman were allowed to enter Nashville Bible School at that point. In 1905, Brewer returned to the School of Evangelists to receive his prepaid schooling. And then he went back to Nashville Bible School. So he's actually a graduate of two schools in a sense of the word that we've been talking about. Then there is the College of the Evangelists. To me, this was an absolute unknown until Teresa and I went to California. She did a Lay's Day and I did a gospel meeting. We've helped a small church there on a couple of occasions, I think, but at least one. And when we were there, we had the privilege of going and visiting with Wayne Jackson. And when we were visiting with him, I saw a picture on the wall. I said, "Brother Jackson, what's that?" And he said, "That is from the College of the Evangelists." And I said, "The what? The College of the Evangelists? Where was it located?" He said, "In Mississippi." I said, "Mississippi? You're kidding me. There was a school in Mississippi." "Well, yes, there was. The College of Evangelists opened in Tupelo, Mississippi, January the 7th, 1957, by Harold Don Rudd." Brother Rudd is a very interesting character. In some ways, you might not be proud to know him if you really studied his life, you know, thoroughly. He was a master, though, of the Bible, a very young man, really, when he opened this school. And yet they say he was one of the best teachers ever, anywhere. I've got reports of that from people who actually were in school. They talk about his tremendous ability. He developed great debaters and he developed great preachers. They had to preach every week, one sermon every week. And they say the boys would fan out, go down and stand on stumps and practice their sermons down there so they could be ready to preach. Wayne Jackson, in his personal notes that he wrote to his children, describes the school this way. It was modeled after a similar school founded by Ashley S. Johnson near Knoxville, Tennessee, many years earlier for poor boys who wanted to preach but couldn't afford the tuition-based institutions. Now, I want to say this with a great deal of love. Brother Jackson's one of those boys. He could not afford to go to school. He had to live. They lived together in a place they called the Shack, I think, if I remember correctly, the name of the place. And several boys lived there, and they would literally take cardboard and cover up the holes in the boards in the winter because they were about to freeze to death. In the morning, yes, sir. In the morning, they would get up and have to break the ice on the water to be able to get a drink. You know, that's inside the shack, not outside that we're talking about. And that's where they stayed in the beginnings of going to the school. Now, eventually, Brother Jackson was invited, and I'll talk about that, to stay with someone else there. Large portions of scripture were memorized in the school, with Galatians being quoted in its entirety on a final exam. I don't know what else was on the exam, but I know that was. And Brother Jackson remembered that very vividly. Wayne Jackson, Wendell Fikes, J.R. Pugh. Brother Pugh's still alive. He's over around Murfreesboro, somewhere along in there. Ralston Potter, Huey Noriad, E.C. Meadows, Al Franks, and a couple of others were in the first class. And let me pause here to say, this is where you need to become acquainted with Tom, because Tom has established a number of virtual cemeteries on Find a Grave. And I'll tell you, the only way I know how to find his stuff, I go to T.B. Larimore and I go down to the bottom. And by the way, Larimore is buried in California. If you don't know, you're probably not going to find it. I did discover that. But you go to the bottom and it'll say this page is managed by Tom Childers. Click on Childers' name. And when you get there, he's got virtual cemeteries. He's got like over 100 of them. And you'll have graduates of various things, people that spoke on Freed Armor lectures, et cetera. There's all kinds of stuff. And he's added some of this that he and I shared back and forth as we're going through. John Howard Waddy, you probably know him as John Waddy, Cecil Hanna, Daryl Perry were in the second class, later joined by Dean Eubanks and John Gary Williams. John Gary died just a few years ago. He wrote some tremendous little tracts, pamphlets that are of great use, one particularly on evolution. Donald Hines directed the third year and moved the school to Fulton, Mississippi. The school closed with graduation 1959. Now, without elaborating too much, I've already told you about Brother Dunn. You know, there's a little bit of a diciness there. He was accused, and I think later it was proven pretty thoroughly that he had an affair outside of his marriage, and that destroyed his influence there. And thankfully, there available was Brother Hines, who finished things out. But nonetheless, both Waddy, in personal notes I have from him, and Wayne Jackson speak highly of what Dunn did for them as a teacher, that he did wonderful things. Was he a good man all the way? No, but he did wonderful things. I'm thankful to say that my baptism is not dependent upon the goodness of the fellow that baptized me. Now, in my case, it was my dad, and I think he was a good fellow. But if he'd have been a renegade, it wouldn't have mattered, as long as he baptized me for the right reason and I knew what I was doing, so forth. So that's the way I feel about that. Now, this is a picture. This is a copy of a copy, and I hate to say that, but this is on the far left. This is graduation in 1959. Far left is Don Rudd. Next to him, now this goes, you just go in order of heads. It's not front and back row, it's order of heads, okay? Because that's what it was given to me. I'm giving to you the same way. So J.R. Pugh, with the great smile, I know Brother Pugh, great fellow. He always has that smile. Daryl Perry, John Waddy, who eventually directed East Tennessee School of Preaching Missions. Hugh Noriad, Wendell Fights. Wendell is still alive. He has moved back from California to live in the Tupelo area. So he's back there. And Brother Wayne Jackson lived with the Fikes family in his last year to year and a half there at school. They became extremely close and had a wonderful friendship. Brother, I had a great conversation with Brother Fikes. He's a wonderful man with a vast amount of knowledge. If you call him, though, plan on, you know, you might ought to get you a sack lunch, because it's going to be a long conversation. Is that right? Yeah. 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 And he's got rich knowledge himself. So that's interesting. Then you got Ralston Potter. This was the fellow we had fits identifying, but we finally the one that identified him was Wendell Fikes. You know, he told me. And he told me this is the graduation picture. Then you have Wayne Jackson and then Donald Hines. So that's that school. I do want to note this. In 1970, Brother Bassebert Baxter reported on some findings that he had. He did this annually, but this is the only one I have. The 21 Christian colleges with two extension programs report 1,438 men who are preparing to preach during the 69-70 school year. 716 men were similarly in training in schools of preaching. So one-third of all the fellows training that year were training in preacher training school. Don't know what the case would be today, but I can tell you that at that point. Some schools founded, we got Sunset, Bear Valley, Brown Trail, Preston Road, which unfortunately, Brother Eldred Stevens and three other faculty members were killed in a small plane crash. He was a marvel. I heard him here at Freed Hartman. He's tremendous, a student of the word and a great, great, great preacher. Nashville School of Preaching, Memphis School of Preaching, Florida School of Preaching, all those were founded in the 60s. And then you've got Whites Ferry Road, Southeast Institute of Biblical Studies, Southwest School of Bible Studies, West Virginia School of Preaching, Central Carolina School of Preaching, Georgia School of Preaching and Biblical Studies, Tri-City School of Preaching and Christian Development. They're not all on here, I promise you. I can come up with a whole lot more myself, but not enough time to elaborate on all of those. I do want to talk about this. Bear Valley Bible Institute has 60 international schools, including schools in Cambodia, 3 in India, Myanmar, Nepal, the Philippines, 2 there, Guatemala, Haiti, Trinidad and Tobago, Peru, Cameroon, there are 2 there, Ghana, there are 9 there, Liberia, 14 in Nigeria, Sierra Leone, Togo has 2, Guinea, Kenya has 3, Tanzania has 2, Uganda, Malawi has 2, Zambia has 2, Zimbabwe has 2, Lesotho, South Africa, Ukraine, New Zealand, and Fiji all have schools that are by Bear Valley. Addition to that, Samrit Kamani, or Gamanese, well, you might really say it, has a preacher training school in Thailand, which is his homeland. He came and trained here at East Tennessee School of Preaching. Myanmar has 3 other schools of preaching, not counting Bear Valley. And then I love this one. The Mabi Bible School in Burma says, we do not train preachers, we train evangelists. You know why they say that? Because in foreign countries, if you're a preacher, you expect you're going to be paid, you're going to have a place to have your office, and you're going to have a telephone. And so they say, we train evangelists. We don't train preachers. Very interesting to me. Then there are others in Ghana, Zimbabwe, Uganda, the Philippines, South Africa. Roger Dixon is tremendous. He's, a lot of his stuff's available online as well for free. I do want to note this, and I don't have time to read all of it. Brother Phil Sanders wrote an article some years ago talking about the value of preacher training schools. He said, they offer training at little or no cost to the student and open the door to many men who cannot afford the cost or the time of a university education. They enable many married men beyond college age an opportunity to train and pursue ministry that might not otherwise be able to train under traditional forms of education. They provide well-trained, biblically faithful ministers for churches that might not be able to afford a traditionally educated man. They arise as a ministry and service of the church and can remain free from the secular and often compromising limitations and requirements of accrediting associations. They can focus on training men to pursue the primary work of the Great Commission and continued spiritual growth of the church. As a ministry of the church, they usually remain under the oversight of faithful elders in a congregational setting. Ministries should have accountability to an eldership of a local church, not to an independent board whose priorities in education may differ from the work God has the church to do. Now, I want to pause 1 second. The one thing that has set Fried Hardeman and Heritage apart is that they have been very careful to maintain their board. The board of trustees is composed of faithful Christian men who will stand up for the truth. That's the only way that's going to work. And that's the only place where I would give you a little footnote to what Brother Sanders said. And I agree with him in essence, okay, but not maybe always. Well-planned, well-staffed, so forth. Many countries of the world depend solely on schools of preaching for their preachers and leaders. You know that. I've given you some of those, just a few. You could sure come up with a whole bunch more. Now, that's what I discovered about preacher training schools. Thank you.